against the sudden jar of his son's weight, then turning immediately toward the relative safety of the rest of the group. But the blanched creatures weren't done. Despite the fire that was now falling like a biblical rain all over them, they were rallying in snowy clumps to try to bar his escape. Ryan kicked out, trying to skirt the largest numbers. Several of the prickled monstrosities disappeared in a gout of sprayed tissue. Now, more and more of the spiders were on fire, the long white hairs blazing with a magnesium intensity, the flames spreading from one to another. But Ryan wasn't yet clear. Half a dozen of the meaty arachnids, heavy as puppies, had gained hold on his pants, gripping with tiny barbed claws.
Hang on to my neck!
The boy was restricting Ryan's ability to use the big panga, but Dean had his own turquoise-hilted knife drawn and ready.
Kill the bastards!
The spreading flames were doing a better job than the full metal jackets.
Come on!
A length of fiery web came drifting toward Ryan, and he parried it with the panga, finding that it stuck to his hand and arm.
Stay there!
Luckily, the fire burned out quickly. He hacked at two of the spiders, but suddenly another was by his neck on the right side. Its hideous face was inches from his good eye. The serrated teeth parted to snap at his cheek.
Fuck!
There was a flash of silver, and the mutated horror disappeared from his shoulder, leaving only a smear of its poisonous blood across Ryan's jaw.
Thanks, Dean.
Okay, Dad.
Now there was only the disorganized fringe of the pack of spiders to be run through. One reared up, and Ryan kicked it so hard that it flew through the air and hit the wall of the cavern at least 20 feet in the air. Doc lifted both arms above his head, holding the smoking Lama.
And the extra point is good!
Now they were really safe, and Dean slid quickly down off his father's shoulders, sheathing his slim knife. On an impulse, Ryan leaned down and hugged his son.
Thanks again, son.
Dean blushed.
Dad!
All right, that's enough of that now.
It was impossible to see across the vaulted space for wreathing coils of stinking smoke. The spiders had mostly vanished into the other narrow tunnels, leaving behind only their dead and dying in scattered, smoldering heaps. Ryan picked up his fallen Steyr rifle, flashing a quick, sooty smile to Christy.
Life's full of surprises, isn't it, babe?
Christy reached out and clasped his right wrist in both her hands.
That was close.
Yeah. Kid got one of the fuckers off of my face. Just in time.
She smiled.
What a horrible stench. Let's get away from it.
Once everyone had reloaded their blasters, they set off toward the Krontemp section of the huge redoubt. Doc was off in the lead, despite Ryan's warning about caution.
The Campbells are coming, oh ho, oh ho. The Campbells are coming, oh ho, oh ho.
He was skipping with joy. Ryan had never seen him so happy. To Doc's frustration, they weren't able to go by the most direct route. Some of the sectors were immovably down and locked, which meant they had to make frequent detours. Fortunately, JB had a virtually eidetic memory for maps and was able to lead them toward their destination by other levels, up and down dusty staircases, through whole sections of the redoubt that had been stripped so bare it was impossible to even guess what they'd once held. At one point, they came near to the surface and the garage area that was seemingly not evacuated. And it was there that they discovered the explanation for the parts of the redoubt that were still left untouched by the clearing party.
There's a half-raised sector.
Mildred and JB had gone on a little ahead of the others. She came back quickly to report to the others.
Oh, perhaps it's half-lowered.
Thanks, Mr. Pessimist.
When they all reached it, around a dogleg turn in the corridor, they found it was actually about 3/4 of the way down, leaving a gap of 2.5 feet to crawl under. There was a straight section of passage beyond, with a number of M16s piled neatly along one wall.
12 blasters.
Ryan became aware again of the flatness of the air, air that had been circulating in the sealed environment of the redoubt for 100 years.
They wouldn't walk away without their weapons.
Christy had moved a few paces along, past the stacked guns, pausing in the open doorway of a room off to the right.
They haven't.
Doc noticed, and then turned away from the grim sight of 12 dead bodies.
May the Lord have mercy on their souls.
Dean stared, blinking in disbelief.
Dad?
What is it, son?
Did they?
Looks like they did.
Mildred and JB went into the room, while the others waited outside. There was a long table with the desiccated remnants of a Last Supper, plates covered with a scummy crust of what could have been gravy or sauce or anything. There were the ubiquitous foam cups and empty bottles. The armorer picked up one of them and looked at the label.
Brandy. French. Armagnac, it says.
And there's these.
Mildred picked up one of a half a dozen small mirrors that were lying on the table.
I don't get it.
So what else is new?
What do you mean?
Mildred held out a tiny bottle of brown glass with a black screw top. She opened it and tipped it against her index finger, revealing a residue of white powder smudged on her skin.
Jolt.
Nearly.
Mildred touched it to her tongue.
Cocaine.
She tipped her head on one side, her eyes closed.
And very good, too. Pharmaceutical quality cocaine, uncut. Nobody stepped on this.
More here.
JB stooped and picked up a white glass bottle.
Must have held something like 800 or 900 grams of the shit.
They drank all this booze and then did huge quantities of cocaine. It's not surprising what happened.
Everyone looked down at the long, silent circle of corpses. 11 were close together in a circle, all seeming to be male. But that was partly a guess, since nearly all of them were missing most of their skulls. 11 45 caliber Colts also lay on the floor.
Reckon we'd find they've all fired a single round.
JB turned and looked across at the body that lay apart from the others, holding a Colt in the clawed remains of its right hand.
Except for that poor miserable bastard.
It wasn't that difficult to reconstruct the macabre scenario. The men had been the last of what must have been a number of official evacuation parties. Their job to finish off the clearing out of the final sections of the rambling redoubt. They'd come close to the end of their task, with only the distant Matran section to work through, though it was possible that had been deliberately left functional as a policy decision. That had certainly been true of other gateways. The Krontemp suite was probably last on their list, then the outside garage and the rooms beyond. But someone had found the coke in one of the pharmacy suites close by. Nobody would ever know where the top-quality brandy had come from, but the mixture had proved lethal to the soldiers. It was impossible to even guess at precisely how things had gone down, but one by one they must have become clinically depressed, a condition exacerbated by the combination of drink and drugs. Probably they talked about what had been happening in the world in the past few hours, or days, guessing by then that it wasn't going to be like the old wars. This one would end it all. There would be limitless, endless dying. By the time the dozen men reached their decision, they would almost certainly have been aware that their families, wives, children, parents, were dead, or so critically rat-poisoned that death would be a needful mercy. So they'd all had a last drink, snorted a last couple of lines of coke. Ryan had picked up a crumbling $5 bill off the table, still rolled into a tight tube. Then the 12 sec men had sat on the floor. JB pointed out that there wasn't a single ordinary grunt among them. They were all special non-coms with long service insignia. Each one had taken out his sidearm and cocked it, placed it into the mouth of the next man along the line, until the suicidal daisy chain was finally complete. At the signal, every man had squeezed the trigger of his own gun and blown off his neighbor's head.
All except for him. Looks like he may be trying to change his mind. Too late.
The lower jaw was missing from the 12th man. It seemed as if the 45 round had angled away off teeth, ripping half the face, jaw, cheek, and eye with it. Mildred looked at the forensic evidence of the man's passing.
I suppose that he must have been knocked unconscious by the shot.
For how long?
Dean stared around the corpse with a ghoulish enthusiasm.
I can't tell. Minutes? Half an hour? There's really no way of knowing. He did lose a lot of blood. You can imagine what it must have been like to die with the certainty that it was all over and done, then to come around and find that it wasn't.
Doc shook his head.
In truth, it is a most doleful thought, ma'am. To recover in the worst agony, purblind, soaked in blood, sodden with the gore, brains, and bone splinters of your comrades. It is worthy of the pen of Edgar Allan Poe himself. Did I remark to you that my maternal grandfather once met up with him, and what was I saying?
Mildred smiled gently.
Just that you were really sorry that the poor guy had to recover consciousness to this car.